Summertime tips and fun facts from Paul, Kristen, and Dexter at Total Wine & More.
If you're topping off your burger with grilled onions and blue cheese, pair your work of art with a spicy Malbec.
Nothing beats a buttery Chardonnay with grilled corn on the cob. I'm ready to find you the perfect bottle of white for your next get-together.
Pack up the cooler for this weekend. We've got canned wine and beer ready to throw on ice.
Now with 9 locations in the Bay Area. Visit our newest store at Stevens Creek Central. Shop online at TotalWine.com. The selection is ridiculous. Cheers.
This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Hello, and with me, Cam Rusland, this week we have somebody who used to be BFM's very own, Lee Tree Lynn.
Hello.
Hello, but now she's just a civilian.
Now I'm just a somebody.
Well, anyway, okay, let's go with that.
All right.
And we have the return of law professor and, well, educator, Azmi Sharam.
Hello.
I haven't seen you in the news recently. You must be staying out of trouble.
Yes, I have.
That's good.
Yeah.
That's good.
Stop. You just want me to get into trouble, don't
you? No. Stop rocking the boat. Keep your head down. And just, you know, preserve the union. And our three topics this week are topic number one, bangsa, a state of mind. Topic number two is, can you like music again after the teenage years? And finally, topic number three is, what have we lost by knowing everything? So, with topic number one, I was in Bangsa the other day. I was deep in the heart of Telawiville. And I was walking around. I hadn't been there for a long time. Thinking, I like this place. Because it's a place for the likes of me. Now, Bangsa, for those of you, you must all know, is a happening shopping area. But it's synonymous with what would be generally called the out-of-touch Bangsa liberal elite. I think that's usually what they're called. It's not meant as a compliment. In the same way that in America they call people the out-of-touch East Coast liberal elite, or in England they would say, oh, those Londoners, especially the people from Hampstead or something. But actually, again, I like Bangsa and I feel kind of at home here. Should I feel ashamed of myself for being out of touch? Am I just some liberal elite, you know, what with my speaking English and not going to some kampong in the middle of nowhere every day.
Well, I mean, what did you enjoy about Bangsa, Cam? I mean, because it's one thing to say it's about the liberal elite. It's another thing to just say, I enjoy it because it's an extremely gentrified part of town and I can get a nice cup of coffee and I can just walk around and look at things. And because it sounds as if you just enjoyed being in a gentrified area, not so much that you enjoyed, you know, that air of crazy Bangsa rebellion, which doesn't exist.
It doesn't exist.
Yeah.
Well, okay, what I enjoyed was I was there the other day and we got into a small car accident. Somebody bashed into the back of us. And I thought, oh, my God, this is terrible. It's going to ruin my day and everything. And we got out and then we exchanged information. The person was incredibly apologetic and it all went really well. And I thought this was a very Bangsa interaction.
I don't know if that's limited to Bangsa, dude. I mean,
I've had
crashes all over the country, and it's, you know, some have been good, some have been bad. I don't think it's geographic specific.
Maybe I was just hoping for a good interaction.
Yeah.
All right, Azmi, you're a man of the people, obviously.
Yeah, absolutely.
And so you look down with disdain, presumably, on somewhere like Bangsa.
A little bit.
Yeah. It's just so unrepresentative of the nation as a whole, isn't it?
Well, it's representative of a class of people, I suppose, you know, and all these classes of people make up the country. It's an important class of people. They're wealthy. They're the ones who are generating businesses and spending money and stuff like that. So it's not an unimportant demographic.
Or is it? I think that this demographic have been told consistently over the years that they are out of touch and irrelevant.
Well, you're only as out of touch as you want to be. But irrelevant, yes, perhaps, at least politically, because I don't think the city centres are going to make any difference whatsoever in the next election. I think if everybody in the cities voted in a particular way, it's not going to make any difference at all, because the difference is going to come from the rural and the semi-rural areas because of the gerrymandering and all the rest of it.
They're irrelevant. I am irrelevant.
Well, politically, perhaps. Yeah, you know.
I agree. I mean, I do agree with that. But I also think that that's maybe the appeal of Bangsa for a certain... I mean, I don't live there. So I'm not speaking as somebody who is, you know, kind of a hardcore Bangsa person. But when I think of Bangsa, when I think of visiting it, I associate it with a lifestyle that isn't necessarily my own. It's like a dip into a world of champagne brunches and, you know, ladies who lunch, and then I leave, and then I go back to, you know, my little own slice of suburbia. But it does represent a certain type of lifestyle. I don't think it says necessarily anything bad about you to be comfortable there. I don't know that it necessarily means that the rest of Malaysia should be like Bangsa. I don't think that's fair expectation.
No, I'm not saying that. Yeah. I'm not saying that. But I mean, I do genuinely appreciate the fact that you don't look down on me as a lady who lunches.
You've always given me that impression, Cam, so it's not new.
Yeah. Okay, so I would say that, very broadly speaking, okay, if anybody, we're not entirely sure, producer Ali has been trying to find the figures. We don't know if anybody actually listens to a bit of culture. But if anyone does, I would broadly put them into the category of an out-of-touch, liberal, middle-class mindset, which we can dump into a kind of a Bangsa.
You know, but having said that, I mean, like, a lot of the movements which changed nations came from the middle classes. In fact, I would argue that most did. I mean, even hardcore communist movements, Ho Chi Minh went to France to study cooking. You know, that's not really a working class kind of background.
That might be a little unfair. He went to France and worked as a washer-up in a kitchen. I don't know if he went there to
study.
Well,
you know, there's an element that thinks that, it's, you know, changes come from the peasantry or from the working classes. But actually, if you look deeper, Mandela was a prince of his tribe. Pramodaya Anantatua was definitely well-educated, middle class. So was Jose Rizal. You know, so a lot of the impetus from individuals who push to forward change comes from the middle classes, you know. So to dismiss the middle classes as absolutely irrelevant, I think, is perhaps not very fair.
Mm. Yeah, well, I mean, Marx would agree with you.
Yeah, he's another one, yeah. And he was a wastrel law student. Kind of reminds me of someone I know. You know, so...
You probably know quite a few, actually. Yeah. All right, well, I was hoping that you would join me in saying it loud and saying it proud, you know. Bangsa, yay.
I'm saying it mild and moderately agreeing.
You are being so... It's embarrassing, quite frankly. All right? We are, okay?
I live in PJ, dude. I
mean, yeah, me too. Oh.
All right, fair enough. All right, okay. Bangsa. I don't know. I hate the place. Okay, so having exposed myself embarrassingly as a middle-class effete with my champagne brunches, we move now quickly on to Man of the People, Azmi Sharam, who's going to tell us about music appreciation past the teenage years.
Yeah, I mean, I read a piece in the BBC, and there was a bit of science in it about how the brain works and how at certain points of your development, it absorbs things differently. I can't repeat the science. I can't remember it. I don't understand it. And this is a bit of culture. It's not night school. So there's no need for us to go into the science. But basically what it says is that the music that really gets us happy is music that we heard in our teenage years. And I think it's true. I mean, like now, I mean, I'm a child of the 80s. And even the music which I didn't necessarily like at that time, when I hear it now, I get kind of boppy. You know, whereas music today, I can appreciate it, but I don't really dig it as much as I dig the music in the past. You know, so I could be listening to radio and it'll be playing something from, I don't know, whoever, some nameless, faceless cookie cutter person from today, and, you know, nothing. But then they'll play
Thompson Twins
or Alphaville, you know, and I'm like bopping around the car. And I'm wondering whether it's the same with you guys. I mean, do you feel that you, you know, the music that you heard in your youth is the most powerful for you?
It makes sense, right? Because I think the teenage years are when we feel kind of those crazy peaks and lows when it comes to emotion. That's when the hormones start surging. That's when you start getting crushes. That's when you imagine that your heart is broken. That's when you have, or your heart is actually broken. And you have all these moments. And I think whatever's happening on the radio in that time is what you're going to associate with those surges of emotion. Mm. And at least for me, somebody who finds seeking out new music, it's something of a chore in the sense that I have to remind myself to do it. And then after a while, I think, why am I doing this? I don't know why I can't just be content with the music that I already listen to. And the music that I already listen to is the music that I started listening to when I was a teenager. It's not necessarily era appropriate or era dependent. I think it's more to do with what I was focused on at the time.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. I mean, like the Beatles, for example, I listened to a lot of them when I was in my teen years.
Me too, yeah.
I had a box set of all the albums, you know, so there's a certain resonance. There's some music from my youth which there's nothing that can be done, right? It's absolutely useless then, it's useless now. Kylie Minogue, Jason Donovan, absolutely rubbish. Mm. That doesn't get me going at all. But generally speaking, you know, like you say, you know, well, Duran comes on and I, woo!
Absolutely, absolutely. But you mentioned science. So the science would be that our brains are unable to absorb the sounds because of our emotional synaptic leaps or whatever. But another science would be that perhaps scientifically the music of today is rubbish.
I mean, this is you pushing that agenda again. No, I know David Bowie died. I know. It's hard. We have to move on.
Bear with me. That maybe it doesn't actually prod the synapses in the same way. I think that a lot of the teeny bopper music now that I have heard, it hits a particular strand, a level, and perhaps does it very successfully. But back in earlier days when we had albums, when albums were the way of selling music and way of making money, therefore you had to write music beyond that band in order to appeal, because otherwise you're just making singles.
Mm-hmm.
And when you start expanding your thought a little bit more, something like, say, you mentioned Duran Duran. I don't know. I mean, Hungry Like the Wolf is kind of like a weird thing. If you were just making singles, you wouldn't go that little bit further.
But it fits into the whole album of Rio.
Yeah. So I'm just saying, scientifically, that today's music is rubbish.
I don't think anybody would claim that the Backstreet Boys are master geniuses of anything. But they make me happy like almost nothing else. And that's because of the, you know, it's because of the time in which I grew up. I would not place them among my favorite artists. I would not say, you know, I picked the Backstreet Boys over the Beatles. And I'm not arguing that they have incredible musical merit that's as yet undiscovered or whatever. But in terms of it being the soundtrack of a certain period of my life, you know, you can't beat it. It just can't be beat. I think there's something about the time traveling aspect that you kind of shouldn't overlook while trying to denounce modern music, Kamrazlan.
I'm not denouncing, I'm just putting it out there. I mean, it's just a stated
fact.
You're
just an old curmudgeon.
Okay, all right. Speaking of trying to break beyond old curmudgeonlessness, have you not found any music that has spoken to you since your teenage years? Is there not one single thing which is not from the 80s, 70s?
Sigur Rós, I guess.
Yeah?
Mm.
You say, I guess. Does it really kind of engage you and sort of like,
you really listen
to it in the way that you used to listen to the old things, looking for secrets and new knowledge?
But maybe because it's so weird and, you know, it's so different from everything else that I've heard before. I'm not like, you know, Zach Youssef or anything. I don't have this broad musical knowledge, but it was kind of odd. But still, it was very, very moving. So, yeah, I mean, it happens, but it doesn't happen very often.
What about you, Lynn? I mean, you're barely
I've spoken before on the show about my love of Hamilton, and when we talk about something that makes me feel like a teenager again in terms of wanting to go look up the lyrics and, you know, get the references and, you know, that kind of thing, for me right now, I guess what comes to mind is Hamilton, the Hamilton soundtrack. I became as immersed with it as it became my Backstreet Boys, if you will. You know, it became the thing that I played over and over again that I thought about. You know, Lin-Manuel Miranda became my little crush for a little bit. So, but it replicated those teenage feelings, those feelings of obsession, of, you know, a good hook, all the things that make it work. So for me, it's still, I mean, yeah, it's new, but it still relates back to that notion of that music that you hear in your teenage years, or that can make you feel like a teenager. That's what will grab you.
Okay.
Yeah.
I'm groovier and hipper than you two. Mm. So, I mean, I have a vast bank of there's Lana Del Rey, Saint Vincent.
Ooh,
that's about it. But but also,
have you noticed like the Guardians of the Galaxy soundtrack all comes from the 70s?
Yeah,
and there was enough variety in the songs to actually fit the mood of each particular scene where the song was being played. You know, that kind of scope of different types of music, I think, has probably passed in terms of popularity. You could probably find it. There's still artists who are doing it, but they're not on the mainstream, they're not on the radio.
Sure. But I, you know, of the music that I did listen to in my teenage years, if it comes on the radio, I'll be very happy, but I don't listen to them on a regular basis. I love Duran Duran, but I do not have not listened to Rio for like forever. I don't know. So, I mean, do you listen on a regular basis to those teeny bopper sounds?
No, but it just, but when it does happen, that's the point of the article. When it does happen, it's the one that makes you happy.
It makes you happy, but it doesn't really like engage deeply, makes you want to pursue.
But that's kind of the point, right? I mean, there's enough of this need to engage or to have that musical experience with something or a musical relationship with something. Sometimes you just want to be happy. Sometimes you just want to sit in a car and, you know, sing at the top of your lungs and after that feel like, wow, I don't know why my day is weirdly improved by that 3.5 minutes, but it is.
All right. Okay, well, there you go. Sorry, folks. Once you get past teenage years, it's all over.
Yeah, it's finished.
You're not going to feel a thing.
If you're a teenager, accrue it now.
Yeah, make the most of it. Okay, but in a moment, we will be returning with topic number 3 here on A Bit of Culture, BFM 89.9.
Save big at Banana Republic Factory with 60% off the entire store. Our biggest sale of the year. Plus, take an extra 50% off clearance. Stock up on dresses, shirts, and shorts under $15. Find your nearest store or shop online only at Banana Republic Factory.
And we're back with myself, Cam Ruslan, Lee Tree Lin, and Azmi Sharon. During the break, I did have a smile on my face as I was singing some old Duran Duran tracks. So what to do? You're right. So topic number 3, Lin, what do we lose when we know everything? Do we know everything?
Well, we can know everything is what I was thinking. So what happened was recently I took a little road trip up to Penang, stayed in a little hostel guest house situation, which had terrapins in a well. And this is relevant because at one point my travel buddy went to the loo and I happened to be looking at the terrapins and I thought, huh, there are no rocks in that well. It's just a well with 3 terrapins. How do they sleep? And my first impulse was to grab my phone and immediately Google, how do terrapins sleep? And I resisted it because in that moment, because I'm on holiday, I think that helped because I was meant to be on holiday. I resisted it and I thought, no, you know, this is something that would be interesting to chat about, to ask the people who run the place, hey man, why don't you have rocks in there for them? Or to ask the person I was traveling with, hey, have you ever wondered this? Or just to take a moment to wonder as opposed to immediately get the answer to what it is that you want. But we're so spoiled. I mean, if we want to know anything, and the same thing happened throughout Penang. Anytime I was thinking, where should I go to eat? The impulse is to Google and to look for somebody to tell me where to eat, to where to go. If I got lost, I didn't really want to take the time. And that's partly Penang traffic. I'm dissing Penang, but there it is.
How dare you?
I know, it happened. It happens. But partly the traffic, but mostly I realized that you don't really take the time to get lost anymore. And there's value in that, right? There's value in getting lost and finding something new that you might not have found before. There's value in asking somebody for directions. But I just feel like that's something that we don't have anymore.
Well, Lin, you've come to the right place because Azmi Sharon, he doesn't have a smartphone.
No, I'm sorry, I do have a smartphone.
Oh my God, you joined us.
No, I've joined you for a long time. I just don't have social media.
Oh.
Yes.
Oh, so you... Oh, I thought you were one of those pure kind of...
No, I wish I could be.
Children raised by wolves kind of thing.
Children sans iPhone.
Another thing is that it makes smarty pants like Cam and myself obsolete. Because, you know, whereas before we could amaze people with our breadth of general knowledge and useless information, now everybody knows everything. There's no impressing people anymore. It's very sad.
Yeah. By the way, can you just tell me, so how do terrapins survive?
Right. So, are you thinking about it now?
Yeah, I want to know. I'm right. So tempted to touch my phone.
Yeah, okay. Well, I mean, we talked about it. My boyfriend who I was traveling with said, yeah, I have terrapins. So he was like, yeah, they don't need rocks. They just sleep in the water. And then I followed that up with, yeah, but do they retract? And then do they just sink like little stones, you know? And
he was like, their backs.
Yeah, exactly. How does this work? And he was like, oh, I don't know. And then we talked about it a little more. And that was a nice conversation to have. And every time I passed the well, I wondered. Then I came home and back to the real world and I Googled it. But I liked having that interlude. I just wanted to say that. But how do they sleep? Okay, so terrapins, it depends. Sea turtles just kind of have a resting state. Some of them kind of go on rocks or coral and just kind of wedge themselves and sleep there. They don't have to move like sharks. Others burrow into the mud and get oxygen from the water. But they do, almost all of them have to eventually surface. Also, it's a mistake to think that turtles are amphibians. Apparently, they're reptiles.
Okay.
Something we're thinking about.
That was an awful lot of information. That was a little bit more than I was hoping for. But
it's there now, though.
But all that information was thanks to Google.
It's a mix, right?
I mean,
in person, I saw them all day, all night, living for the 3 days that I was there. So I'm like, okay, They're definitely sleeping in the water.
So do you feel like a richer person for knowing that? Do I feel like a richer person for having been told that? I don't know.
Well, I mean, you're holding a bunch of, as me mentioned, useless facts, right? I mean, we all have them in our heads.
I love useless facts.
Me too. You may never need to know this about turtles, but now every time you pass one, you'll be like, I know how you sleep.
Yes. I know the origin of the word avocado, which is very rude, but you know, yeah, it's useless, but wonderful.
And if it makes you happy, is it useless?
It makes me very happy.
Yeah, see, you know, that's the thing.
Yeah, I hate myself, actually, for doing that Googling thing. I wonder, though, sometimes if it's just out of boredom. I don't really need to know that thing. Just, what else am I going to do? It's come into my mind that I don't know this. I could just carry on in a land of mystery.
I also think it ends arguments much quicker. And when I say arguments, I don't mean, you know, the kind of vicious arguments you have with people. I just mean debates. Because if somebody wants to shut someone else down, it used to be that you would talk it out. Maybe later on, much later, the more spiteful party would go back home, look it up, and then come back and go, I told you. But right now, the I told you comes immediately. You know, we could be talking about something, hey, did Roger Moore have more James Bonds or did Sean Connery? And then, you know, it just ends because you Google it.
But
these
are facts that we can agree upon. I mean, the amount of Roger Moore, James Bond movies were a certain number, a finite number. But if we then start arguing about chemtrails and conspiracy theories, you know, did NASA land on the moon or was it just faked? The internet can help justify your argument and say it was faked when in actual fact, well, I mean, I would say in fact, but, you know, people would be saying, no, it's just, it happened. But you can be backed up by false facts quite easily by the internet. So it's a danger as well. I mean, it's not pure certain knowledge.
Mm. Yeah, absolutely.
I mean, I get that. I understand it. I think for me, it's more the issue of whether we've sourced out some of our thinking.
Yeah.
Because I think
and remembering,
we definitely
do that. And remembering.
Yes.
You don't have to remember anymore.
Nobody's numbers. Yeah. You don't have to remember really anything about anybody. You know, if you had social media as me, you'd know everybody's birthdays. Now, you kind of still have to remember that.
No, I don't. I just don't
you
bother.
You just ignore. Yeah, yeah. That helps. But in general, I mean, there is that worry or that fear, at least for me, that I'm losing the ability to engage with the people around me and with the world around me. That whole idea of getting lost is a big one for me because I've realized even in KL, I switch ways on, not because I don't know where I'm going, but because I just want to know the traffic. And if you do that, you will always skip, for example, most likely Jalan Tar. You'll never go there because, you know, it's just a pain. But that means you lose out in some really beautiful KL roads. You know, you just don't drive it because they're a pain to drive.
Yeah, yeah. Well, my wife uses Waze a lot more than I do. But she keeps telling me she discovers these new places as a consequence because it takes her through these new... And she, for her, it's actually made KL a more interesting place. Strangely enough. But Azmi, although you may not be a wild child who was raised by wolves, and you do have a smartphone now, which I didn't know, but you are not on Facebook.
No.
So you are different from myself and Lynn. I mean, we somehow still seem to be able to talk to you as if you are a normal human being.
Uh-huh.
But I haven't actually been able to make eye contact since you said it. But,
but you are actually living in an alternative, parallel, older universe.
Yes.
So Lynn and I, we know the big stories, not just about Donald Trump, but about the latest scandal that is inhabiting the internet. You've no idea what's going on.
No, of course not. But does it make your life any richer?
No, it makes it a lot worse.
Exactly. There's too much information as it is. You know, the average human being today gets more information in a day than the average human being, say, 300 years ago gets in a year.
Yeah.
You know, so it's a lot to process.
What I want to know is how do you seek out your useless information now? Or not seek it out. How do you incidentally come across it? How do you, you know, where does it come from? Do you have new sources of it? Or is it all from encyclopedias you read as a child? Which I did. I mean, that's, I think the bulk of my useless trivia comes from my childhood, actually.
Yes, primitive person. How do you? Tell us.
You know, books, magazines, these things exist still. I do use, I mean, of course I read stuff on the internet as well. You know, of course I do.
There are cracks in the
just, I never said I don't use technology. I just said I don't use blinking Facebook and Twitter and whatnot.
All right, okay. We're going to move on now. I would like to set a challenge to Azmi. I'd like to force him to put Facebook on his phone, try it out for a few days, and then see if he can kick that habit afterwards and take it away.
Right.
Yeah? No, but that's difficult because he has to establish a whole situation. You know, Facebook's different. I think you can join Twitter with very little sort of footprint and leave. Facebook's
right.
a bit different.
All right.
Twitter, maybe.
Okay, okay. But anyway, you are a precious thing.
I am.
Azmi, and it's wonderful to be close to your aura of innocence.
You're welcome.
Right. But we move on, though, now to the final part of the show, recommendations, where we recommend something that we think might be of interest. And I guess I go first. So my recommendation is a film, and it's from New Zealand. I think it's brand spanking new. I think it was this year. It's called The Hunt for the Wilder People.
Oh, so good.
Brilliant. Very, very good.
So good. Yeah? Not this year, but last year.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Which is good for me.
Yes.
That's pretty good.
No, it's true. So it last year is really this year for you.
Yeah, it's up to date for Cavs.
Yeah. All right. But anyway, it was post-1995. And it's just a wonderful film. They've thrown all of New Zealand at that movie. Magnificent, majestical landscapes. Majestical is a word from the movie. Sam Neill is there.
And being wonderful, being, actually. Yeah.
Very
being
good.
Pretty good.
Very good. And this wonderful little kid, an otherwise almost entirely Maori cast.
And it's hilarious.
It's hilarious.
It's really funny.
Don't be stupid, Sarah Connor. I love that.
If you haven't seen it, it's a really great film, and I'm so happy that I stumbled onto it, thanks to social media, actually, and the Intertubes told me.
Wasn't he the same fellow who did that mock documentary about the vampires living in modern-day New Zealand?
It is. Also the same guy who's currently doing Thor 3.
Ragnarok, yeah. Right? Yeah, oh, right. So I'm looking forward to Thor Ragnarok because I'm wondering what kind of sensibility
Taika
this
Waititi.
Chap
yeah.
is going to bring into it. You know.
In fact, he's the priest in the movie.
In
The Hunt for the Wilder People. There is a funeral. He presides over it. That one.
Oh,
yeah.
Okay. So, yeah, it's
useless information.
It's a great film. I wish I could watch it again for the first time.
Yeah.
It's one of those. So that's mine. Hunt for the Wilder People. It's safe to watch with your children, my goodness. Mm. Assuming they are actually your children. Okay. So moving on, recommendation number two is Azmi.
It's American Gods, not the book, but the TV series, which has just come out. So if you're interested in watching something a little bit different than your superhero stuff, it's an interesting series. I mean, it's still ongoing, so I'm not sure whether it's going to be as satisfying as the book, which I thought was probably Gaiman's best book.
It's my favorite.
Yeah. So it's a concept of all these ancient gods who are still around because there's still slivers of belief in them and the clash between them and the new gods, gods of technology, of media. It's weird, but it's interesting and not bad.
I'm having trouble trying to understand it. So it's like flying through the air and people bashing each other? Or?
No, not at all.
Quiet thought pieces.
It's actually more, I mean, the gods are run down. It's actually something that steers away from the coasts of America. It's firmly in the Midwest or the middle of America. And these are gods who were brought over by immigrants. And now their descendants have forgotten about them or no longer really believe. But gods are sustained on belief. So if gods don't have belief to make them fat and glossy, how do they make their way in the world?
Oh, okay. Sounds yeah. And Neil Gaiman, obviously I'm young, hip and groovy and I know these things, but isn't he doing like comic strips himself?
He started off with comics. He started off in 2000 AD,
yeah.
which is the best comic in the world. And then he moved on to DC and he did stuff like The Sandman and then became really, really big.
All right. So when you say the book, you meant a comic book?
No, it's actually a book.
That was
actually a novel. He also does novels and stuff. So that was actually a novel.
It's the meatiest of his novels.
Yeah,
it's a real brick.
Yeah. And it's nice to see something coming from a novel instead of a comic book. Or
okay. All right. And Lynn, you're watching it at the same time. Are you enjoying it?
Yes, I am. It's interesting. I mean, it meanders and it wanders a bit more than your regular TV show, I feel. It lingers on scenes. It's done very interestingly. I think the visuals are really interesting.
Okay.
Yeah.
So that's American Gods. And it's being shown as we speak.
Yeah.
Available on the legal streaming site of your choice. And so recommendation number three is Lynn.
Yeah. I feel a little bad recommending this actually after two very kind of, not happy, but two relatively.
American Gods is happy, is it?
Mm.
Sounds miserable.
I don't think it's cheerful.
Okay, then we're on a downward slide from The Wilder People. Okay. I just wanted to recommend My Family's Slave, which is an article that was published on The Atlantic. You can read that online. And it was written by a writer named Alex Tizon, who is a Filipino-American. And it is what it says on the tin. It's actually a telling of a woman named Eudocia Tomas Pulido, who lived with his family, and they called her Lola, which is the word for grandma. But she was essentially their slave, and she was their slave for 56 years. And it's an interesting take on, I mean, it's just a really involving family story that also has these shades of complicity, and it's just wonderful. I mean, I started reading it. I didn't think I was going to finish it because it was so long. And everybody I know who's read it has had the same experience of starting it. And, you know, typical internet article, you start it, you think, oh, maybe I'll come back. And then before you know it, you've read the whole thing because the writing is wonderful. And because it's close to our society, we have helpers. We have helpers from the Philippines, some of whom aren't treated very well, some of whom have to sit at another table, some of whom don't have their passports all the time. And, you know, she wasn't paid for 56 years and she had nowhere to go. And the author was a son in this family, and it explores his own feelings about not speaking out because he was worried he might get his family deported. It talked about how it drove a wedge between him and his mom. It's just wonderful.
And it spurred a lot of commentary by Filipinos. I haven't actually read the article, but I read the responses.
It's actually spurred a lot of commentary in general. The Atlantic is slowly publishing responses. So you've had people saying, like, you know, this is evil. Other people saying it's good to humanize evil. Others saying, well, he was just a child. The conversation is tinged with sadness in no small part because he passed away the day that they decided they were going to make it the cover story. So in some ways, this is his final contribution to the conversation that has since sprung up around it. So it's interesting in that sense also. There's that layer of it because he's not able to kind of say, I understand how complicit I was. You just have to read it. I think it's must read.
What era was this?
Recent.
I mean, yes. This person was what, in the mid to late 20th century? Or the story is set in what time?
The story is set in pretty much now. So
really?
56 years from, let's say, I'm going to just hazard a guess of like 2006, 2010. So if you count backwards, it's pretty much our lifetime.
Right.
Because you can see it happening here. I don't think it's very distant because he's also Filipino, understands that there is a culture of, you know, people, there is not slavery necessarily, but there is that culture of people coming to serve people in the city, people serving as helpers, household helpers. It's not, and so he tells it from that perspective. And then there's also that overlay of slavery. It's just, it's a must read. It's very, very good. My Family's Slave on the Atlantic by Alex Tizon.
Right. Okay. Yeah. See, Wild Child, Azmi Sharam, you never knew anything about that because you're not on social media. So you didn't know. You didn't know it was a big thing that was happening.
Yeah, I'm so deprived.
You're missing out. Join us. Okay, so that brings us to the end of this week's show, and only remains me now to thank special honored guest. Which one of you is the special honored guest? Azmi Sharam.
Oh, the pain.
Thank you, Cam.
Bee Tree Lin, ex of BFM.
Yes, yes.
She no longer has a chair here, but she was once here. And myself, Cam Ruston, if you'd like to get in touch with us, please do so on, well, we're all across Twitter and I sent a tweet today. No, sorry, Azmi. No. And Instagram, are you schmirling?
I'm still schmirling, yeah.
Schmirls. Mm-hmm.
I have no idea what you're talking about. You can send me a postcard if you want. Care of BFM.
All right, okay. And please like our Facebook page. Every like on the Facebook page gets a free champagne brunch in Bangsa. And so with that, please join us next week for another exciting episode of A Bit of Culture here on BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.
Get to Old Navy for star-spangled style. Right now, everything's on sale, up to 60% off. That's right, get everything from tees, shorts, dresses, and swim, all at 60% off. Now till July 7th at Old Navy and OldNavy.com. Valid through 7/7, select styles only.